Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Compulsive Overeater from New Jersey and your moderator for today. The share ID numbers for Friday, November 29th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,955, that's 21955. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,956. That's 21956. This morning, A Vision for You presents To Infinity and Beyond, Life After Step 9. By working steps 1 through 9, we have been transformed. When we finish step 9, we experience the promises. We have recovered. The channel of grace in us is cleared. The sunlight of the Spirit deep down inside of us is allowed to shine up and through us. We are restored to sanity. The problem of compulsive overeating has been removed. The only requirement is that we stay in fit spiritual condition. The 10th step is actually steps 4 through 9 in a single package applied to the present. Working step 10 means adopting a way of life that requires continuous commitment and effort. The difficulties and the rewards of the step come from applying it to our lives day after day, month after month, year after year. Our abstinence depends on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. The powerlessness over compulsive overeating that nearly destroyed us will return if we do not work on maintaining our contact with God. In step 11, we carry that goal even further. We seek to improve the conscious contact with God that we have established in the previous step. Joining us today to elaborate on life after step 9 is Janet B., a recovered compulsive overeater from North Carolina. Janet is dedicated to our 12-step way of life, including carrying the message of recovery to all of us today. And it's with great appreciation and always a delight to welcome Janet to the line. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday. I'm Janet B., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina, and I am thrilled and honored to be talking about steps 10 and 11. I never like to really talk about a step in a vacuum in case there's someone new, so I'll do just like a really quick 1 through 9 and my life and my experience with it. Real quick, 5 minutes. First step says we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives were unmanageable. That means I had no power. No matter how much I wanted to stop binging and for me purging, I couldn't. Each day I would say, I'm going to stop, but I couldn't. I had no power. So once I admit that, obviously my solution has to be to find a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. And that's what these steps are about. Step 2 is when I come to believe that there is a loving God who will restore me to sanity. In step 3, I decide to turn my whole life, not just my food, but my entire life over to the care of this loving God. In step 4, as I start doing these, I get more power. With each step, we get more and more power. Step 4, I inventory my resentments, my fears, my harms. Step 5, I turn this over to God, to another person, and admit these to myself. And then some awesome promises start coming true, right? And one of them is that the feeling that the drink problem, or for us, the food problem, has disappeared will often come strongly. So often, maybe more than 50% of the time. And it says we feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, with God. In step 6 and 7, I ask God to remove my defects. I always think this is such an amazing thing. Like, I I created these defects. I created these problems, but God's going to remove them. He could have just sat in a corner and said, Janet, I'll be here waiting when you fix yourself up. But he knew I couldn't, so he comes and helps me. In step eight, I make a list of all the amends I need to make for all the wreckage I've caused. And in step nine, I go out and I fix them. I make these amends. And I had some pretty hard amends. I had to go back to an ex-boyfriend and tell him that when I had told him I'd been raped and got pregnant and didn't know if the baby was his or the rapist and took money for an abortion, that it was all a lie, that I'd never been raped and I'd never been pregnant. And I went back to the hospital where I'd gone to have a fake rape exam, and I made my amends. And so we're going to pick up on page 83 right after we finished our amends with the gorgeous promises there. It says, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, if we've worked 1 through 9 properly, we will be amazed, like joyfully surprised before we're halfway through. And gorgeous promises. We're going to know a new freedom from food, a new happiness that doesn't necessarily depend on what's going on in my life, just this kind of inner joy. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Believe it or not, I had one or two sponsees who told me that they also faked rapes. So hearing about mine made it easier for them to come forward. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Top of page 84. Okay, it says we will comprehend the word serenity. That means not just feel it, we're going to understand it. How are we going to understand it? And I think our big book gives us a definition of serenity, right? Page 68 tells me how I can have serenity no matter what the calamity is around me. It says, we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns. And here's the formula for serenity. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? So for all you math geeks out there, it goes like this. A units of doing what I think God would have me, plus B units of humbly relying on him, equals AB units of serenity. See, calamity isn't a factor. So that's a promise that I can have serenity no matter what's going on. And it tells me I will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone or up the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. And because my experience can benefit others, I don't feel useless anymore. And I don't have self-pity because we get a great sense of purpose. It tells us we stop being selfish. We stop being self-seeking. We stop being afraid of people and of not having enough money. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Life just gets easier. And then it says, we will suddenly realize God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Okay, so this tells me something about God, right? For some of us, we're there and like, I don't know if I believe in God or I don't know if God is good. This is a God who's willing and ready to give me all those promises. So this tells me that this God must love me, must care about me. And just like when God created the world, he created physical laws like the law of gravity, right? I'm taking my pen right now. I throw it up in the air. There it is. It clatters on the floor because there's a law of gravity. There's just physical laws in this world that so that the universe can function. God also set up spiritual laws. And for our great benefit, we are the most blessed of all people that he set up these spiritual laws that when we do those first 9 steps, we start getting those promises, serenity, peace, fear leaving us, a great sense of purpose. That is a spiritual law that, which means that just like if I throw up my pen 100 times, the law of gravity says it will fall to the ground. If 100 people, 100,000 people work these steps, do 1 through 9, 100,000 of them will get these promises. What a loving God to build the universe with that spiritual law into it. And it says, are these extravagant promises? Yeah, we think not. They are being fulfilled among us. Who fulfills them? God does, right? Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work on that for them. So how do we work on them? So we've gone through the first 9 steps. We've cleaned up our past. In the AA 12 and 12, when it talks about step 10, it says, okay, we've made our amends. Then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions, right? If this program doesn't work under all conditions, what good is it? And by the way, it does. You know, sometimes people say, well, you know, I've had so much stress and that's why I broke my abstinence. In this AA 12 and 12, it talks about the early AAs going off to war. I cannot think of anything more stressful than war. And they stayed abstinent. So can we, no matter what. So it says, okay, now we're at step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We don't become perfect as we work this program, but we have a tool, a mechanism by which we can clean up all our mistakes. Then it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So what does that mean? So I think what this means is we start doing this stuff, living this way, as we work the first 9 steps. So I don't wait to say, okay, this program requires me to be honest. After I clean up my first 9 steps, And I think it means we commence this way of life trying to connect with God as we clean up the past. I gave myself an assignment the day I got serious about this program to spend 45 minutes every morning with God, prayer, meditation, spiritual reading, vigorously commence this way of living, getting a relationship with God, cleaning up our past. And it says, we have entered the world of the spirit. What a beautiful line. See, to me, I think about like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, right? She's in black and white, and then she's in color. You know, when she's in black and white, she can be wearing ruby red slippers and click them and nothing happens. But when she's in Oz, she clicks those ruby red slippers and they can take her home. We have entered the world of the spirit. That means I no longer live by the law of I better do everything I can to get what I want or I'm going to have a horrible life. It means I live by the maxim that I will try as best I can to do everything that my loving God wants me to do, and I will trust that he will take care of me. Totally different life statement. So we've entered the world of the spirit where we trust that God will take care of us. Our next function is to grow an understanding of God and spiritual things and effectiveness. How can I get better at helping people and relating to people? And again, back to the AA 12 and 12 under step 10, they give us 6 ways that we can grow in effectiveness. It's on page 93 of the AA 12 and 12. 1, we stop making unreasonable demands upon those we love. 2, we show kindness where before we had shown none. 3, with those we dislike, we can begin to practice justice and courtesy, going out of our way to understand them. 4, when we fail any of these people, we can promptly admit it to ourselves always and to them also when the admission would be helpful. And 5, we often ask ourselves, am I doing to others as I would have them do to me today? And finally, the number 6, restraint of pen and tongue. The whole world doesn't need to know what's on my mind the second it comes to mind. I need to exercise restraint. So it tells us this isn't an overnight matter. It continues for our lifetime and what we watch for. We pay attention to our spiritual life. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear. It says when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Okay, this tells me I have a hotline to God. So it's like, if I'm at work and I see coming up on my text, one of my kids saying, Mom, I really need you right now. I'm going to stop what I'm doing and I'm going to call my child and try and help him or her any way that I can. We have the same hotline to God. We can ask him at once for help. And then it tells us we discuss our defects, what we've done wrong with someone. We make amends if we need to, and we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Why? Why do I have to turn my thoughts all the time to people I can help? Well, page 14 tells me this, right? Last line of page 14, I have double asterisk stars by it. If an alcoholic compulsive eater failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he didn't work, he would surely drink again, or for us, eat. And if he drank, binge, he would surely die. So they are telling me it is like life-saving to turn my thoughts to someone I can help, to do something for someone I can help. And then it reminds me of something that my good friend Melissa just says all the time. We have a new code, love and tolerance. Fairness is no longer my code. Are things fair to me? Love and tolerance of others. What is love? One of the best definitions I ever read is that love is composed of three parts: loyalty, self-sacrifice, and forgiveness. Loyalty, that means if someone does something wrong, I don't need to go telling everybody else. Self-sacrifice, I look to do things that will benefit the other person, even if I have to pay a price. For me, I will confess to y'all, one of the things I hate doing is cleaning. I'm not good at it. I don't like it. It takes me forever to just simply like arrange a table. But I don't live by myself. So part of my self-sacrifice is to force myself to do some cleaning every day. And forgiveness. That means I try and put myself in the other person's shoes to say, maybe this person just had a bad day. I can forgive. And I can surely forgive because God has forgiven me. And tolerance. That means my threshold to withstand something uncomfortable has been raised. So if someone says to me something that isn't super kind, I'm not hypersensitive anymore. You know, I used to be I remember back in grade school, if someone said they didn't like what I was wearing, I would feel sick to my stomach. And other people are entitled to their opinions. My day doesn't get its tone by how other people think of me or talk to me. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Loyalty, self-sacrifice, forgiveness, and not being hypersensitive. And then even more promises, right? We just had a bunch, but here's more. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, even food. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor, food not on our food plan. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. So remember, each step, we start getting more and more power. By the end of step five, it's like, well, the feeling that the food problem has been removed will often come strongly, more than 51% of the time, I think. Now, we will seldom, hardly ever, be interested in food not on our food plan. But we're human. Every now and then, something may tempt us. If tempted, not necessarily when, if it happens, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. Now, when I see a hot flame, I don't sit there and think, okay, if I put my hands in this hot flame, it's going to burn me. If it burns me, it will hurt. I may have to go to the hospital to get treated for a third-degree burn. No, it's automatic. I recoil. We get that instinct back as we work these steps. It says, top of page 85, we react sanely and normally, and we will find this has happened automatically. We will see our new attitude toward liquor, toward food, has been given us. Okay, given to us by who? By God. It is a gift from a loving God, a pure 100% gift given us without any thought or effort on our part. And I was thinking about that because I was thinking, I put a lot of thought and effort into working these steps. But I'm recalling back my early days. My thoughts and efforts were on doing exactly what my sponsor told me, just kind of keeping my nose to the grindstone. I didn't, and then it was like I noticed, oh, I wasn't binging today. And then, oh, I've been absent in a week. I've been absent in a month. I've been absent in a year. The thought or effort went into connecting with God and helping other people and clearing up my path. And when we do that, they say this new gift or new attitude toward food just comes. It says that is the miracle. And what I feel so strongly is that this program is about miracles. It's not about tools and rules and food plans. Yes, of course, we need, you know, some structure and we need some accountability. But at its essence, this program is about miracles. We can go back to the minister's son, the story is at the end of We Agnostics. On page 57, it says, he could not drink, even if he would. God had restored his sanity. They say, okay, God restoring his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? It's a miracle. But then they tell us its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe, right? He was powerless. He knew he couldn't stop on his own. He took a step one. He humbly offered himself to his maker, to God. Then he knew. That's the miracle. When we draw near to him, he discloses himself to us. It says, we feel as though we are not fighting it. We're not avoiding temptation. Of course, at the beginning, we may have to avoid temptation, right? It tells us that in the chapter, Working with Others, right? Go, each family ought to decide in light of his own circumstances if he should have alcohol. If there's a party, you know, we have to think, do I have a legitimate reason for being there? If we're shaky, it says, work with another alcoholic instead and don't go. I remember early on in recovery, I was at work and there was a pizza party and I felt I couldn't have it. I had my own meal that I brought with me and I sat in a separate office by myself having my meal because I couldn't take the temptation. Now I have to tell you, I don't even know where the candy aisle in my grocery store is. It just does not call to me anymore. But at the beginning, okay, it might, and then we are smart about it. Page 85, continuing, it says, we feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Okay, who placed us? Again, God. This is a loving God. This is not a doorknob, and this is not even a group, because as much as y'all might love me, you can't make any promises come true in my life, and you certainly can't place me in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Let's talk about this position of neutrality. Let's assume it's like a place, like the land of neutrality. And when we're there, we are safe and protected. It's like we're guarded by, you know, these like angel guards or something that keep us safe and protect. We don't need to swear off. The problem has been removed, again, by God. It doesn't exist. We're not cocky. We're not afraid. This is how we react so long as we keep it. Spiritual condition. So they're telling me that God has placed me in the land of neutrality, right? And I'm allowed to stay there. I keep in fit spiritual condition. Okay, how do I not keep in fit spiritual condition? Because the next line is, it's easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. I think of it like this, like in middle school, we all learned about in social studies about the king who had a land. Let's call our king's land the land of neutrality. And then he had the people who he protected, who worked on the land. And then when the invading armies come, right, they are safe and protected. His soldiers will protect them as long as they stay on the king's land. But people like me, like us, are prone to wander off the king's land. How do we do it? By saying, nah, I don't like what this king has for my life. I'm going to leave the land of neutrality and run to the land of I can do it on my own. Or I'm mad at so-and-so, so I'm going to leave the land of neutrality and take a very short vacation on the land of resentment, or the land of self-will, or the land of fear, or the land mostly of pride, the land of, no, I got this, I don't need your help, God. Then we leave the land of neutrality. And then when the illness comes knocking and we're not safe and protected, it's not because the king stopped loving us, because the king said he'd stop protecting us. It's because we left. But I believe our king, our God, is so good that when we leave, he launches search and rescue missions for us so he can bring us back to the land of neutrality where he can keep us safe and protected. So what do we do to stay in the land of neutrality? Page 85, it says, we're not cured of alcoholism, of compulsive eating. We have a daily reprieve, a daily stay of execution, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. The vision of God's will. God has a will for me. God has a will for us, a purpose for us. And all day we're supposed to be looking for it. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, God's will, not mine, be done. So it goes ahead and says, much has been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we follow directions, if we've done 1 through 9, we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. You know, I think we read these words so often that we just don't pause to realize how beautiful that is. We have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. It's like an infusion of God's grace coming into us. And says, we've become God conscious. A way to become God conscious is to just ask ourselves, where did God show up today? A great question to ask ourselves every night. This morning, as I'm getting out of bed, I hear almost a crunch. I'd left my glasses on the floor. If I had stepped on them, you know, like 1 inch over, I would have crushed my glasses, and that would have not been a good thing for this very nearsighted woman. Thank you, God, showing up for me today, stopping me from crushing my glasses. Says we've become God conscious. We're aware of God, but we have to go further. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. It says we can't be shy on it. Better men than us are using it constantly. And back in the AA 12 and 12, it says on page 97, it has been well said, almost the only scoffers at prayer are those who never tried it enough. Those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine, and for the same reason. When we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. As the body can fail its purpose for lack of nourishment, so can the soul. So it says, we use it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Okay, so what are the, first it says prayer works. What does that mean for prayer to work? And I think it means a few things. One, it means we get changed. We get transformed more into the image of our Creator. You know, it's like when you hang out with someone, you start becoming more like them. I moved here to North Carolina from New Jersey about 14, 15 months ago. Before, I always said, you guys this, you guys that. Like, you guys, come on, you guys listen. Well, now I've been down here, I've been around these Southerners, and now it's like, do y'all get that? You know, here, y'all come here. We become like the people we hang around with. If we hang around with God, we become more like God. So that's one way it works. Another way it works, we start getting answers to prayer, not on our timetables, but we see answers. And what are the biggest answers? What's the thing we pray for most? Knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry it out. We start getting more of those intuitive thoughts. We get the power to not open our mouths when we want to, but we know we shouldn't. Prayer works if we have the proper attitude. And I think the proper attitude, first of all, is worship, recognizing that he's God and I'm not. So I will tell you, I start my prayer time with worship. I sing a spiritual song to God in the very off-key voice that he gave me. I worship him. I worship him for all the good things about him. We all worship, right? It talks about that in We Agnostics, that we are hardwired to worship. And so I start with worship. That's a proper attitude, and work at it. So what are the other components? I include gratitude. And I know a lot of us have those apps where we just type, you know, our gratitude and then send it off by text to our sponsors or someone else. Yeah, I have that app. I do that too. But I do something else. I pause, and after I write, thank you, God, for this, that, whatever, I sit there and I say out loud or in my head, thank you, God. I don't make it a homework assignment. I practice gratitude to God. And what does the AA 12 and 12 say about gratitude? So on page 92, as an insurance against big shotism, we can often check ourselves by remembering that we are today sober only by the grace of God, and that any success we may be having is far more his success than ours. So praise and worship, gratitude, and then praying for other people, praying for things in the world that may be troubling me. And so it says we work at it. We persevere in prayer. We put in time. I'll tell you, and I know someone may say this isn't in the big book, but I tell my sponsees at least 30 minutes every morning, prayer, meditation, and spiritual reading. But it doesn't say 30 minutes in the big book. It says we work at it. We put in the time. We put in the effort. It says it would be easy to be vague about this matter, but we believe we could make some definite and valuable suggestions. So, and they tell us here, back to the AA 12 and 12 on page 98, there's a direct link among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit, but when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. Now and then, we may be granted a glimpse of the ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom, and we will be comforted and assured our own destiny in that realm will be secure for so long as we try, however falteringly, to find and do the will of our own creator. Okay, so that's why we're doing it. And now they're telling us kind of how. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Now, great wars have been fought over whether the nightly review is step 10 or is step 10 only the spot check and the nightly review is step 11. And I say, it doesn't matter what we call it. We just do it, right? It doesn't matter. We review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? And again, when it says, were we resentful? Of course, we don't just say, yes, I was resentful. We work it through the same way that we would, that we did in our fourth step. Who we resent, why, what it affects, my part, my defects. So here's one that came up on my 10th step recently. One of my children told me that she thought she might flunk out this semester. Now, she was on Dean's list the past two or three semesters, and all of a sudden, she's she's busy, she has a job, and she's focused more on her job than on her schoolwork, and she may flunk out. So I got a resentment. I resent my daughter. Why she's flunking out of school, what it affects, For me, my pocketbook, right? I worked hard. My husband worked hard. We spent thousands of dollars. It's going to be down the drain. What's my part? Okay. This is, again, where no one can really tell us our part. Someone might say to me, well, your part is, you know, you've made an idol out of your kids going to college and being professional. No, that's really not my part here. My part is I paid for the college semester as a gift to my daughter. And I have no right to say what she does with that gift. Now, I have a right to, if she flunks out this semester and asks for money next semester, to say no. That's a healthy boundary. But, you know, but for this, now, someone might say, well, oh my gosh, you are entitled to be angry here. I mean, you spent that money and look what she did. Yeah, maybe if I was a normal person, but page 90 of the AA 12 and 12 says, if somebody hurts us and we're sore, we are in the wrong also. But are there no exceptions to this rule? What about justifiable anger? Right? I could be justifiably angry that she didn't care about wasting my money. If someone cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous people? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. So again, I have to look at my part, and my part is, I'm thinking that if I give someone a gift, I have a right to say how they use it, and that's controlling. Now, again, for a lot of people, the problem might be, their part might be, My daughter isn't graduating from college, and I want kids who are college graduates. Then I would suggest that the problem is idolatry. And I had a lot of idolatry with my children. For me, it had generally manifest in my relationship with my children. Are my children going to love me? And I was alternately too lax or too hard on them, based on whether I thought they were going to love me or not. So I had to pray about that. And if anyone wants, I have a prayer for idolatry against children that I created. But anyway, we look for, were we resentful? Were we selfish? So the main thing I look for is, did I do what I was supposed to do today? Did I help other people? Did I do my cleaning around the house? Were we dishonest? This is something I think should generally be no, because from day one, we are told we cannot be dishonest. If we're dishonest, it's like we put up a big sign on our heart saying, keep out God, because God won't coexist with dishonesty. So, but, you know, of course, we're human. Every now and then, I slip. Was I dishonest? Yes, and I fix it. Were we afraid? Again, we analyze the fear, and we don't just write, yes, I was afraid that, you know, whatever was going to happen. So a recent one for me is I had a doctor, I have high blood sugar, both my parents were diabetic, and in spite of being at a healthy body weight and exercising and eating healthy, my numbers aren't where they should be. And I had a doctor tell me that no matter what I do, within 5 years, I was going to need insulin. So I had a fear. So what's my fear? That I'm going to be on insulin, okay? And then again, I do just what I did in the fourth step. I ask God to remove the fear and direct my attention to what he would have me be or what he would have me do. God, please remove my fear. God would have me continue to eat healthy, continue to exercise, and to realize I am not entitled to perfect health. That's not a guarantee of this program. That's not a guarantee anywhere. I'm not entitled to a body that doesn't break down. So I think it's so important that we include God in our 10 steps. Otherwise, we're just doing like pseudo self-therapy. So just like when we were doing our 4-step, for every resentment, we would stop. We would pray. We would ask God to please remove our resentment. We would resolutely look for our own part. We do that in our nightly review. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Secrets are the undoing of addicts like us. We can't keep secrets. I confess like really ugly things about myself. I've confessed prejudice. I've confessed, you know, mean-spiritedness where like I hoped something bad happened to someone. Obviously, I would pray for God to remove that, but I confess it. I let my ugly show. Now, I'm very circumspect about who I talk to. I talk to my sponsor. I have my like nightly review partner who I'm very close to. And I have a few women who I'm close to. I don't owe it to anyone to disclose anything about myself unless I feel super comfortable with that person. So was I kind and loving toward all? What could I have done better? We could always do something better. We could always pray more. We could always help more. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or thinking of what we could do for others or pack into the stream of life? But we're careful, right? We don't drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. We ask God's forgiveness and make our corrective measures. Why don't we drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection? Because we're not going to be helpful to anyone. Then I'm just self-centered, thinking about myself and how awful I am, right? We ask God's forgiveness and we move on. And then we just, as we work on it, we get better at 10 steps. On page 91 of the AA 12 and 12, it says, we need self-restraint, honest analysis, a willingness to admit when the fault is ours, and an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. We need not be discouraged when we fall into the error of our old ways, for these disciplines are not easy. We shall look for progress, not for perfection. Okay, just a side note on that, progress, not perfection. They are talking about our spiritual walk. They are absolutely not talking about sticking to a food plan, progress, not perfection. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I binged twice last week, but the week before, you know, I binged five times, so it's progress. Uh-uh. No way. No alcoholic could go into an AA meeting and say, I only got drunk twice this week, and last week I got drunk six times, so that's progress, and have everyone cheer. Once we start working this program, God gives us the grace. God gives us the power to be abstinent. We can have perfect abstinence. We can stick to our food plan as soon as we connect with God and begin working these steps. But of course, in our spiritual life, it's progress. Of course, I'm still going to get angry. I'm still going to get fearful. But how can I judge that I even have progress? That my bounce back period is shorter? That before, if it used to take me 3 days to resolve a resentment, now maybe it only takes me 3 hours, and then 1 hour, and then most resentments I can resolve in 15 minutes. Our bounce back period gets shorter. That's how we know we're making progress in the spiritual life. Hisena tells us what to do when we wake up. Page 86, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. So I say that. I say, God, please keep me free of self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking. And then I add what my own Achilles heels are, pride. And I say, please destroy my ego. And then it tells us when we do that, we can use our mental faculties with assurance, for God gave us brains to use. We are supposed to think. We are supposed to ask questions. We are supposed to try and grow spiritually. So I can think now, okay, God, what would you have me do? And it says our thought life is on a much higher plane. It's on the spiritual plane, right? When our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. What does it mean to be on a spirit on a much higher plane? How many planes are there? Well, again, if we think back to the spiritual world and we think about gravity, right? I drop my pen, it falls to the ground. Well, how come birds don't fall to the ground and airplanes don't fall to the ground? Because there's a higher physical law than the law of gravity. The law of aerodynamics transcends the law of gravity. Okay? So my thinking can be on a higher plane instead of the plane of what can I do to get what I want for myself? It can be on the plane of how can I serve you, God? How can I be of help to other people? Remember, our book says we keep our head in the clouds with God, but our feet on the ground, because that's where our fellow travelers are and that's where our work is. It tells us when we think about our day, we may face indecision, right? We don't know what to do. But it tells us what to do if I'm not sure. We ask God for inspiration. Okay, if I'm asking God, that implies that he is going to answer me. And how do we get an answer? An intuitive thought or a decision? So when I meditate in the morning, so my practice is I do some spiritual reading, read from the Bible, read from a devotional that's biblically oriented. I pray and I meditate. So for me, I sit down, I set a timer for 10 to 15 minutes, and I pray, I ask God for, and I ask him this, I say, God, please give me knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry it out, and please show me how I can help the still suffering compulsive eater today. And then if I have any specific things going on, I will ask, and then I'll sit with my pen and my journal, because just like if I'm going into my boss for any issues, I'm going to write down what he says. So too, my employer with a capital E, I want to write down anything he says. I have a friend in program. She actually hears an audible voice from God. God just talks to her. For me, it comes in the form of, as they say in the book here, an intuitive thought. It'll be a line out of the Bible, a line out of the big book, or occasionally a line out of a song. And sometimes the thought will come into my head right away. Recently, I had been asked to do a weekend workshop up in Canada. And, you know, for me, I'm very concerned about my blood sugar. The worst thing for me is to be like sitting all day long for 2.5 days straight. And I sat down and I said, God, should I go do this retreat? It's a chance to be helpful, but I'm not going to get a chance to like walk around and move much. I'm going to be sitting all day, which is like not healthy for me. What should I do? I asked for an intuitive thought or a decision. I sat down and instantly the intuitive thought, and I know because it's a thought that I didn't have before, that it's almost like someone stuck an index card with words into my brain. And it was, you know, you're supposed to be healthy so you can help. You can't turn down a chance to help people in order to be healthy. And so I went on the retreat, and actually it was in a nice little place, and a friend and I made sure we took walks every day. But God gave me the intuitive thought because I sincerely wanted it. It says we relax, we take it easy, we don't struggle. We're surprised how the right answers come after we've tried it for a while. This becomes a working part of the mind. So page 87, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable we're going to be inspired at all times. Again, let's pause and look at the beauty of those words. We have made conscious contact with God, the entity, the creator that like flung the stars into the sky, that decided where the planets were going to be. I can have conscious contact with him. Says, but okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're probably not going to be inspired at all times, and we may get a bunch of absurd actions and ideas, but it gets better. It's okay to make mistakes, right? We're going to come up with some, you know, things. That's why it's good to check. If I, you know, were to get some thought, you know, so let's say when my daughter was flunking out of college and I'd have thought, you know, well, I'm not even going to give her rent money for this month. And it's like, wait, let me check on that. Let me see if I'm being severe. So I call my friend, we discuss it, and it's like, no, I finished paying for her for this semester, her rent money, as I had told her, and then we move on. I can't assume that every thought that comes into my head is from God. I really need to check it. Is it in line with love? Is it in line with my ideals? Is it in line with being helpful to others? Is it honest? And it says, we conclude our peer, and the Oxford group, which is what AA was derived from, the group it was derived from, had four things that they checked. They said, when they had a thought, they said, is it absolutely loving? Is it absolutely unselfish? Is it absolutely honest? And is it absolutely pure? Good ways to check. So it says, we conclude our period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what to do, and that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems, and ask for freedom from self-will especially. So when I close my prayer time, I say, God, please give me whatever I need to take care of the problems that arise today. And then I end with a little more praise, open and close with praise. And it says, we don't make requests for ourselves only unless others will be helped. So for me, I can pray for patience for myself, for unselfishness for myself, because clearly others will be helped. When thinking about the blood sugar issue, I pray, like, God, if it's thy will and it will be make me helpful, please make my blood sugar go down. But if for some reason, you know, it won't be helpful to God, okay, you know, his will, not mine, be done. And it talks about we can ask our wives, our husbands, our friends to join us in morning meditation. We might memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. A lot of good prayers for that, right? Like the St. Francis prayer, the Serenity prayer. Since there's many helpful books also. And we can get suggestions from our clergymen. So what I did is I looked up to see what did the founders of AA study, what books did they use, what were their prayer practices, and to try to make use of them. And then the final thoughts, I say, as we go through the day, we pause when we're agitated and doubtful and ask God for the right thought or action. God can show me how to think, how to act. We constantly remind ourselves, so this is an action we can take, we're no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves, page 88, many times, thy will be done. We're then not in danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. These things are dangerous to us. Why? Why are they dangerous? Because if I'm running and making foolish decisions, if I'm worried, fearful, I'm liable to run on self-will. And what happens then? If I'm running on self-will, I'm running out of the land of neutrality, and I'm on my own, and that is dangerous. And it says when we live this way, relying on God, we become efficient. We're not always exhausted because we're not burning up energy foolishly to suit ourselves. It says it works. It really does. Steps 10 and 11, I like to think of it as like a stool with three legs at the end, right? With three legs. We clean up the wreckage of each day, right? So that, step 11, we can pray and meditate for knowledge of God's will so that we can really work step 12 and help others, right? What does it say? The very beginning of step 12. Nothing will so much ensure immunity, like a vaccine, ensure immunity from drinking or eating compulsively as intensive work with other alcoholics. Obviously, I don't have time to go into step 12 today. But I'll try and come back to it another time. So they close by saying that this works. It really does. And I just want to close by reading something again out of the AA 12 and 12 on this, page 105 of the 12 and 12. Perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost, frightened, and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seemingly evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. We know that God lovingly watches over us. We know that when we turn to Him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Janet B., for this beautiful presentation this morning. Very thorough, very instructive, very, very helpful to many, I am sure. Thank you. Another gem for the archives. Today's share ID, 21,958. That's 21958 for today's presentation. Janet's contact information will be given at the conclusion of the recording, so you'll need to stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Janet by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your first name, including the first letter of your last name. Star 1 to unmute.
Anayeta R. from Texas.
Ilana K.
Cheryl M.
Who's M?
Joe from Connecticut.
Cheryl M.
Cheryl M. And then someone from Connecticut.
Yeah, Joe from Connecticut.
Joe from Connecticut. Thus far, I have Anayeta R., Ilana K., Cheryl M., Joe. I'll need your initial for your last name. Who else?
Jeannie B. from Florida.
Jeannie B. Great opportunity to ask a question.
Cat G.
Cat G. Star 1 to unmute. Okay, well, let's get started with this group. Once again, Hanayeta R., Alana K., Cheryl M., Joe, Jeannie B., and Kat G. Let's get started. Questions only. In the interest of time, Hanayeta, please go ahead with your question. Anayeta, star 1 to unmute, please.
Sorry, I was talking to myself. Thank you, Leah, for your service. And Janet B., wow, wow, wow. Thank you so much. I have two questions. I'll try to keep them short. Do you say 30 days of beginning, you know, like of meditation and the things that you said? I would like to know what they were. And do you do that from the very beginning when you first start with somebody? That's step 1. And the other one is, what does packed into the stream of life mean to you when you read that on our during at night? I'd like to know your thoughts on that. So thank you.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay, so packed into the stream of life. Am I looking to do things that will be helpful to other people? That's just simply what it means. Am I, you know, as opposed to getting things for myself, am I looking to do things that will be useful, helpful to other people? So for my sponsees, I do tell them from day one, at least 30 minutes every morning in prayer, meditation, and spiritual reading, because the whole goal of this program is to get a relationship with God. And we can't get a relationship with someone if we're not spending time with them. So, yeah, I tell it from day one. Thanks.
Thank you, Hanayeta R. And next, Alana Kay, your turn.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Leia. Thank you, Jenna, for this gorgeous, gorgeous class I'm going to have to listen to again. I wanted to hear your prayer you said for children when they become like an, I think you said idol worship. I would love to hear that prayer.
Yeah, so I'll read it, and then if anyone wants it, they can text me and I'll send it to them. Lord, trust my children to you now. I release them to your protective care, knowing that they're much safer with you than in my clinging hands. Please remove all idolatry of my children and my relationship with my children from my heart so that I don't endanger them or myself. Please remove all fear that I won't matter to them. I release my children to you, and I release my fear to you so that I am free to cling to your hand. Thank you that as I entrust my children to you, you're free to shower blessings on them. Thank you that your presence goes with them wherever they go. Thank you that you will guide my children and help them learn to trust you. Thank you, Lord, that I matter to you. And thank you that your presence stays with me as I relax and trust you. God, I am excited to watch and see what you will do. Amen.
Gorgeous. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alana K. Cheryl M.
Hi. Excuse me, fog in my throat this morning. This is Cheryl M. from South Carolina. Thank you, Janet, so much for your presentation. You had mentioned about looking into the spiritual books that the founders of AA had used, and I'm wondering if you have the names of some of them you could share.
I do, but I actually, first, I think it might be treading on an outside issue, so I would just encourage you to look them up yourself. I will say there is a guy named Dick B, and he's got books on Amazon, and he has, like, books that will list, like, he has one like Dr. Bob's Library. So this information is readily available.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you, Cheryl M. Joe, we need the first initial of your last name, please, Joe.
Joe at C in Connecticut.
Thank you. Go ahead with your question.
Oh, Janet, amen. Thank you for your experience, strength, and hope. It's really wonderful to hear people who've been in the program way longer. I've got some knowledge, so I always appreciate it. My question is how can you like stop yourself from going down that rabbit hole of remorse and you know, that land of fear and resentment and worry and remorse and morbid reflection quicker? Because, you know, I live in 10, 11, and 12. I have my, you know, I'm building on my conscious contact with God. It's like, that's the last couple of weeks, you know, with the winter blues coming on, what happened. It's like, oh my God. And so my question is, what do you do to nip those things in the bud before you spend hours on them?
Okay, so you talk about two different things. Winter blues, and that to me is kind of an outside issue. But remorse for something I've done wrong. So I believe in a God who forgives me. And if I've done something wrong and I go to him and I'm truly sorry, I ask him to forgive me and I make my amends, I believe he will have forgiven me. So once he forgives me, so if the creator of the universe has decided that I deserve forgiveness, who am I to say that, no, I don't? If I do that, then I'm putting myself as smarter than God, more righteous, you know, than God. And I don't want to do that, right? Because that's a dangerous place to be. So I can just tell myself, God has forgiven me. I've made the amends. It is over and done. Move on. Otherwise, it's really a form of pride to not forgive ourselves and to wallow in like morbid reflection and remorse. So, thanks.
Thank you, Joe C. Jeannie B., your turn, followed by Kat G.
Good morning. This is Jeannie B. from Florida. Thank you, Janet. I've been getting to hear you for my couple of years now. I'm so grateful. So my question this morning is, do you ever struggle with food? And if not food, with something else? So if you could describe a struggle, what that looks like for you and what you do when your struggle comes up, please.
I really don't struggle with food, thank God. Let me think of a struggle, and I'm sure it's going to have something to do with my children. So let me try and think of a recent one. So let's say we take a family vacation. We're going to take a family vacation. And, you know, we pay money to go to a nice place and know that, you know, as he has in the past, my son will spend almost all day inside on his computer, even if it's a bright, sunny day. Now, when he was 11 years old, I could do something about it. He's 22 years old now. You know, he's a senior in college. So when I find myself like, we're going to go on vacation, he's just going to be inside his computer all day, I'm like, okay, wait a second. You know, I'm not in control. He has a right to do what he wants. So before we went, I just said, Daniel, I don't care what you do on vacation. I will just ask that you come out to dinner with us every night. And then the rest of the time, you do what you want. And he said, okay, fair enough. And he did. He came out to dinner with us every night. He was on his computer probably most of the time. So the way I dealt with it and the way I deal with things is realizing I don't get to control other people. They get to do what they want. Now, I would have a right to say, Daniel, if you're not going to go to the beach with us every day, you're not coming on vacation with us, right? I could decide to put up that boundary, but I didn't want to. I wanted my whole family together. So I was willing to respect my son's desire that for him, you know, he works hard in school. He's doing ROTC. He's going to go into the military. If for him, a relaxing vacation is inside the apartment on his computer, who am I to say anything differently? So I think that's the main thing is I don't get to control other people. I can put up a boundary if it's difficult for me to, and I don't want to deal with the situation, but I don't get to try to change anyone. That's how I, because most problems are with people. So that's how I deal with them. I realize I don't have the right to change anyone. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeannie B. Kat G., your turn to pose a question.
Hi, good morning. My original question was asked earlier about the prayer for our children, so that was great, and I will be asking for a copy, or I'll try to get a copy of that from you later, but I just wanted to ask what you would say to someone that needed help on meditating, or maybe one of your sponsees or somebody under you, when they say, I'm not sure how to meditate, which is a big part of our conscious contact with God.
So there's, first it can just be sitting quiet and asking God for knowledge and direction, and then just listening. And there's a pamphlet called How to Listen to God that I believe one of the founders of AA or the Oxford Group put together that is just a really good PDF on how to meditate. So I would direct them there or to some other resources. But it's really just a matter of sitting quietly and asking God for direction. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. All right, we still have time for questions. If you'd like to pose a question, star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Linda G. from Alabama.
I have Elena,
Elena
P.
Leland P.
Yes, Leland P.
Colleen M.
Colleen M.
Nancy
Carlos.
L.
Leia S.
Let me tell you who I have. I missed some initials. Elena C., Linda G., Leland P., Colleen M., Nancy, Carla, and Leia S. We're going to go with that list, and we'll see how far we get. Let's begin with Elena C., please.
Good morning, and thank you, Leia, and thank you so much for the presentation, my sister in recovery. I was struck by the phrase, please destroy my ego. And the reason I was struck by, because it is my understanding in this recovery that we are growing and transforming. We're not being destructed. Or maybe you meant the same thing. Can you please elaborate on that?
I just want God to destroy my ego so that I have no pride. That's it.
And would you like to say more about that? Anyway.
No,
okay,
no, that's really it. I just want God to just completely get rid of any ego that I have. So that's what I pray for.
Thank you, Elena C., for your question. Next up, Linda G.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. It was wonderful. I have gone through the steps, I have sponsees, and suddenly I find myself tangling with the food again. I don't know what's going on. Can you make a suggestion to me?
What do you mean by tangling with the food?
All of a sudden it's calling to me, and I don't know why.
So the best thing to do, I have two suggestions, is to really do like a really good 10-step. Is there any dishonesty in your life? Is there any resentment, fear? I would start with dishonesty. So, is there any dishonesty in your life?
No.
Okay. So look at resentments, fears. Are you doing enough work helping other people? And then I did a podcast on relapse called Pitfalls in Recovery that was a special edition, so you could find it. And it lists, I think, 16 or so reasons why people end up relapsing. So that might be able to help you if just an uber 10 step alone won't do it. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Linda G. Leland P., your turn.
Hi. Thank you so much, Leah, and thank you, Janet. That was really jam-packed, so I'm going to have to listen again. So you mentioned praising God, and I was wondering if you could explain that more. I don't come from any religious tradition. If it's an outside issue, then you don't have to mention it, but how does one even go about that? Thank you.
No, that's okay. It's a good question. I'll tread lightly here because, you know, people in different religions or no religions may practice it differently. So praising God means just thinking of like things about God that are praiseworthy, that are good, and praising him for it. Like, God, you are so creative. You could have created the world in black and white, but you made the world in color. Mm-hmm. God, you are so forgiving. Mm-hmm. You could, you know, all the things I've done wrong, you could have just held me accountable and, you know, let me pay the price, but you're so forgiving. Like, God, you are so loving. When I'm sitting here in compulsive eating hell, you pulled me out of the pit. You created these 12 steps for me. You see, I'm just like praising God for his different attributes. And you could,
Google like gratitude to the next level. Sorry.
It's gratitude to God for who he is, not for what he's done per se, but just for who he is. And I'm sure you could Google like
prayers to praise God, no religion, or whatever religion you are. I'm sure you could find that online. But I just find, instead of going to God and sitting down, you know, like he's my servant, okay, God, here's my list of what I need you to do for me today, I start with praising him for who he is.
That was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Leland T. Colleen M., followed by Nancy.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you, Layla and Janet, for doing this meeting this morning. I'm Colleen M. from Maryland. Janet, I wanted to ask you, do you work with agnostics and atheists? And if so, how does that look for you? And maybe also touch on people that have a faith but are struggling to trust and rely on the higher power.
Yeah, that's a great question. So if someone is an atheist or agnostic, but they are willing to entertain the idea that there might be a God, I can work with them, right? We have to be willing. If someone isn't willing and they say, I don't believe in God and I don't want to and I'm not willing, I don't feel like I can help them. Okay, so if they're willing, yes, because I believe, you know, our book says when we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. So if people are willing, they will very often, I believe, always come to the knowledge of God if they're willing. If someone is struggling, I actually have two podcasts on this. I did a podcast on We Agnostics. We Agnostics really goes through all the reasons why people might be struggling. It talks about the different prejudices that people have, maybe because of how they were brought up, why they rejected the idea of God. They think if there was a God, he wouldn't have done much for me. So I would go through with them why they're having trouble with the concept of a loving God. I mean, Bill Wilson had trouble, right? He said he believed in God, but he said he was in the war. He saw the burnings. He said if there was a, it seemed like the devil was the boss universal, but he was willing. So I would help the person see what her blocks were. Why does she have a block? As long as she's willing. And then we can get through those blocks, okay? But we have to get down in the weeds on that. Thanks.
Thank you,
Thank
Colleen
you.
M.
Thank you.
Nancy, followed by Carla.
Oh,
please
thank
offer
you, Leah.
Your,
thank you.
Yeah, your last name, your initial.
Yes, please. Ma'am. Thank you very much. Nancy L. in Arizona, and thank you, Janet. I have noticed that in the last, I've been abstinent quite a while. I have noticed in the last 6 months that when I'm done with a meal, I want more. And it's troubling me because I was like, where's this thought coming from? Just wondering, do you ever have those situations in your life? Thank you.
Not really. I mean, they're not really. I guess what I would suggest is first check out your food plan to see if you're getting enough food, and then just talk with your sponsor and Uber 10 step to see if there may be, you know, a dishonesty that you haven't revealed or some resentment that you're harboring. So I would say it's one of those two things. I mean, sometimes people's food plans are like, real or just not enough calories for them and they're legit hungry. So I would say it's either that or there's something spiritual going on and to work with your sponsor to figure out which one it is.
Thank you, Nancy L. Carla, followed by Leah S.
Carla C., Wisconsin, C. like cat.
Thank you.
And
go
my
ahead,
question,
Carla.
Thank you so much. My question is, how can I get abstinent if I can't work the steps until I get abstinent?
Well, okay, that is a great question. So I will tell you my experience. I was binging, stuffing bagel chips down my throat behind a locked bathroom door, right? Binging. Went to a meeting, took a sponsor who I knew was no nonsense, and said to that person, I will do anything you tell me. Went out in the parking lot and basically said the same thing to God. Like, God, I'm willing to admit everything I've thought about you is wrong. And I didn't binge after that. So I was abstinent during the meeting. So I think if the food is down, like, let's say right now, you can start working the steps right now and get enough power to get you through until you get to the next step. Because we get, starting with step two, we get a little power. And I heard this saying once, willingness allows grace to enter. So very often, and again, this is my experience, when I was willing and I started, the obsession was lifted. So I would encourage you to get hold of a strong, godly, big book woman and do whatever she tells you. Okay, but you can start now. The minute, if your food is down right now, you can start right now. Even if you were binging right before this meeting, you can start now. Okay?
Thank you, Carla C. Leia S., your turn.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this excellent, excellent meeting, Janet, and of course Leia for always standing by, and everybody else. This is Leia S., and my question is about knowing. I'm very glad you spoke about step 11. Maybe you can elaborate on that. When you know you are hurt and acknowledging those feelings and you need a confrontation about your hurt feelings, and there's the real fear of continuing to be rejected. That's my question.
So again, I think this is something where someone would have to get in the weeds with you, because there's sometimes when we're hurt where it's appropriate to say something. But sometimes it isn't, that I just need to resolve it because I've been hypersensitive. So I think these are often the things that are good to talk to our sponsor or a recovery partner with, but I'm really sorry, without knowing the details of it, I can't give you any guidance. Sorry.
Thank you, Leia S. Looks like we could fit in one more question. Anyone else have a question?
For Carolyn S. from New York.
You're it. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, thank you. My question is, you just said, Janet, about if somebody was binging before the meeting, they can start working the steps right now. And I've been told that a person has to have, anywhere from like 48 to 72 hours of abstinence before working the steps. So, could you just clarify what you meant by that?
Yeah, I really meant exactly what I said. And I know that, other people and people who are in recovery have, X number of days, hours, whatever. My experience proves otherwise. And I mean, if you think about Bill Wilson, he was drinking when Ebby came to visit him and planning on drinking more. And Ebby didn't say, I'll come back when you've got, 3 days. He started with him then. Dr. Bob, right, when he went to meet with Bill Wilson at Henrietta Cyberling, he had been drinking, no plan to stop drinking. I mean, he said to his wife, I'm just going for 15 minutes and I'm out of here. So my reading of the big book, and again, there may be people who disagree with me, and that's okay, is that person can start working it right away. And that was my experience. I started working right away. No one said to me, Great that you're willing. Come back when you have 48 hours. My sponsor started with me right then. As soon as I said, I am willing to go to any length and do whatever you tell me. So again, this may be an area where people have different opinions, but based on my understanding of the Big Book and my experience, I think someone can start working it right away.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn S., and thanks to everybody who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you so much, Janet, for your consistently helpful presentations that you offer us today. Certainly today was informative and illuminating and will help many. Today's Share ID, 21,958. That's 21958. And we're going to close now from page 164, found in the chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.